Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31 is the famous parable, and I think this may be the second most famous parable well known to mankind or just the general population behind the prodigal son. And both of these are in the same chapter. And anyway, it was 6 years ago that it was at the time right after Dad died, Timothy put up this, he wrote this diagram up on this chalkboard that Glenn had gotten for us so many years ago. And anyway, Leona thought this was such a great thing. She told me right after Timothy got finished with that lesson that make sure that this isn't erased. She wanted this to stay up. She'd never seen anything spelled out so well this way. And so here we are 6 years later, and it's still up. And now we have not covered the text. It's been six years. Now, I've referred to it many times through these 6 years. We've used this diagram that he put up, but this diagram is based, not completely, Timothy's brought in other scriptures and passages, but the main core is from the rich man in Lazarus that Timothy ended up making this diagram. And he drew this just off the top of his head and wrote it up in about 20 minutes. We didn't get here too early, but he got in here just in time to get it all down. And so anyway, I've always appreciated this. And so we'll look at this more next week. As far as this, the rich man and Lazarus, it's been debated whether this is a parable or what people call an allegory. And I'm not really looked up exactly what that is, but I gather, they're meaning a fable, something that doesn't mean anything, and I don't know, it's fake. I don't know. I don't understand their meaning, but there are people that are very adamant. There's a friend of our family that is very adamant about this. He studied from some other man that said, I don't know, I never understood what the basis was, but that this rich man in Lazarus has no meaning whatsoever. And it's an allegory, and it's just worthless. There's nothing you can do with it. And I don't know, that doesn't even make any sense to me. But he adamantly denied that this is a parable. Well, when you look at Luke chapter 15 and 16, this is the fifth of five parables that Jesus has given right in a row, back to back to back. He gave the three parables, the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the prodigal son, and then, that's in chapter 15, then he goes right on here in chapter 16, he also said to his disciples, so he's turning to them now, and talks about and tells them about the parable of the unjust steward, and then goes from straight into that and right into this parable of the rich man and Lazarus. So I don't understand this denying that this is a parable, and I don't know, which they came up with some strange conclusions because of this, so I don't know if they had ulterior motives to want to deny that this is a parable, but I don't see any other way. The context tells us that it's a parable, because this is parable number five. In the last two chapters, that's all Jesus has done here, is just parable one right after the other. Okay, so that being said, this is, there was also a preacher, Eddie Parrish, down in Fort Worth at Brown Trail years ago, and he gave a sermon that he titled, 1 Second After Death. And it was based on this parable of the rich man and Lazarus. And what he said about this parable in about this is, before this time, there was all kind of, even the Hebrews, there were many things that God had kept a mystery from mankind because he had not revealed it to them yet. So, of course, the plan of salvation was one of these things. Abraham had no clue about anything. He knew that the whole world was going to be blessed through his lineage. He did not know how. He didn't know anything other than that. It wasn't anything against him. It was because God had not revealed that. It wasn't the appropriate time to reveal this to the world and to the people, to mankind yet. Well, so salvation is one of the things that was kept a mystery until when? Until Acts 2, the day of Pentecost. And then it was no longer a mystery. He revealed it to the Jews. Then it was opened up to the Gentiles in Acts 10 later. And then there was no mystery about God's plan of salvation after that. So for 2,000 years, that's no longer been a mystery. Another thing that was a mystery since the beginning of creation, since Adam and Eve, was the afterlife. That was a mystery because God had not revealed it to mankind. But at this point, so even today, there are still lots of mysteries. There's still lots about the afterlife that we do not know. But this is the phrase that Eddie Parrish used in his sermon, One Second After Death, that here Jesus opens the veil. He cracks the veil open, pulls it back a little bit for us to get a glimpse of at least one segment of the afterlife. So this is, Jesus is revealing to mankind what happens immediately after death, but before the judgment. That's what this is talking about here. Okay. Now, Kaufman wrote one page, but I made it big to make it 2 pages worth. I'll just cover these analogies first of the parable. We're already familiar. I think I'll cover the text next week due to time. But I'll read the analogies first, and then I'll read this summary. And then I think that will help us when we cover the text next week, Lord willing. Okay, so the analogies of the parable. Kaufman, and this is according to Kaufman. Kaufman said, Abraham is God, who alone presides over the judgment of men. Now, I don't know. This is the only thing that I'm going to take exception to Kaufman. Here, and we'll cover this either next week or the week after. Here, Abraham's bosom is what Jesus calls this here. But on the cross, Jesus refers to this same place as paradise. Well, then, after Jesus resurrects, his soul for 3 days and three nights, his body has been in the heart of the earth for 3 days and three nights, but guess what? His soul has been in paradise or Abraham's bosom. So, is Abraham God who presides in paradise? The answer is no, because when Jesus resurrects and comes back to earth, on that Sunday morning, he is talking to Mary Magdalene. She wants to cling to him, to hug him, to touch him. And he tells her, don't touch me or don't cling to me because I have not been to the Father yet. So, is paradise, that's where Jesus was, because guess what? Jesus said to the one thief on the cross, today you will be with me in paradise. So that's where Jesus went. We know that. Is that where God is? No, because Jesus, for those 3 days, he was not with God. So paradise is separate from heaven where God lives. So that's the only exception I'm going to take to Kaufman. I don't think Abraham is represented by God here, because God is not in paradise. Okay, number 2. The rich man is primarily the scribes, Pharisees, and the priests of Israel. They are the ones who wore the purple of God's royal favor and the white linen of the sacred priesthood, and they fared sumptuously in the bountiful knowledge that God delivered unto them in the Scriptures. So, and this is very consistent with the context, because here Jesus was talking against these Pharisees in the parable of the unjust servant. And then he was even talking against the Pharisees in the parable of the prodigal son. They were the older son. More specifically and more generally, it was the Israelite nation as a whole were the older son that were not going to be accepting of the Gentiles. And Kaufman is going along this same line of thinking, which is a perfectly logical. That's the way Jesus would do. He would stay in context and keep trying to pound this same point. So the rich man are most specifically the hierarchy of the Israelites, the scribes, the priests, the Pharisees. And okay, and now who is Lazarus begging at the gate? Well, Kaufman is consistent again, and to me this makes perfect sense. Lazarus is the whole Gentile world lying in wretchedness, sin, and misery, which awful state Israel made no move whatever to alleviate. Here, I've mentioned this in the past. Several years ago was where I first read this from Kaufman, and I'd never heard this before. And I'll just repeat it again. I even mentioned this a few months ago, I believe. And Kaufman restates this again here, that in God's ideal plan, whenever for the Messiah to come and then he be sacrificed, but his ideal plan for the message of the good news of his kingdom to get spread would have been all of these Jewish hierarchies, the scribes, the Pharisees, and the priests would have mobilized themselves and the whole Israelite nation to go over the world and to have evangelized all of the Gentiles all together, working together. But unfortunately, they refused, and these parables were talking against them. And ultimately, I'll read here in a little bit, but I'll go ahead and tell you. Kaufman said, this is a parable to let these Pharisees know that this role is about to be reversed. Right now, the Gentiles are cast away because they move themselves away from God. And right now, you have the favor that was on the earth. See, the rich man had all of the riches and had everything. Lazarus, being the Gentiles, had absolutely nothing. But Jesus is telling them, and I'm confident they didn't pick up on any of this. I think all this went right over their heads. But it's all right here. Then the roles are about to get reversed. And the Gentiles are going to go and be the preeminent favorite of God just because they're accepting his plan of salvation. Whereas the Israelites, primarily the scribes and Pharisees and priests, will be unfavored, and they will be tormented because they are going to reject God's kingdom and refuse to teach the message of God's kingdom to the Gentiles. So it's about to get turned on its head. In fact, he says it right here. I'll read his status. His statement. The reversed status of the rich man and Lazarus foretold the reversal of the status of the Jews and Gentiles in God's favor, as related so many times by Paul in Romans. Okay, now, who are the dogs that licked Lazarus's sores? Kaufman said, that they correspond to the ineffectual treatment of the Gentiles' wretched and sinful miseries by their philosophers, poets, and legislators. He poorly worded that sentence. A lot of times he adds all these extra adjectives and things and like to use bigger, more antiquated words. But basically, he said that these dogs were the philosophers, poets, and legislators of their day. You know, with the Greek mythologies and then all these philosophies, that's what they based their of being good or their morals based upon that kind of thing. And these were the dogs that licked Lazarus's sore, tried to soothe and heal the sick or the spiritually wounded. But these philosophers and poets and the mythologies that could do nothing for salvation, just like these dogs licking the sores, did no good whatsoever. Okay. The desire of the beggar to be fed suggests the longing of men's souls for a truth which they do not have, but a truth which the Jew had and had richly. They had this knowledge richly, God's word. The Jews are the ones that had it. And which, if he had been faithful to his trust, the Jews, then he would have imparted to the nations of the Gentiles. So this desire of Lazarus to be fed was this desire to get the knowledge of the plan of salvation. But unfortunately, just as the rich man refused to give crumbs, no food at all, and these crumbs are representative of teaching God's word, they gave Lazarus nothing, this poor beggar. They gave him nothing. The Israelites gave none of the wisdom of God to the Gentiles. They thought of them as dogs. They hated the Gentiles. And so they didn't want anything to do with them. And they sure weren't going to give them God's words of wisdom. Definitely of salvation in his kingdom. So that's what this desire, the beggar was wanting to be fed spiritually and about God's kingdom and salvation. But the Jews refused. Okay. Now he has this statement. It is in the primary application to the Pharisees and others like them in the leadership of Israel that the full impact of this remarkable parable appears. The Pharisees were not merely rich materially, but they were the custodians of the whole treasure of God's revelation to mankind. So they were the custodians of the whole of all of God's revelation to mankind. And it was their unfaithfulness to that trust that God had given to them, more than their mere misuse of money, that earned them the denunciation apparent in this parable. So that was their misuse, is they did not share, in the parable, didn't share his wealth with this poor beggar, but in reality, that is, they did not share God's treasure of his revelation and about what had been previously kept a mystery to all of mankind, but revealed to the Israelites first. But they rejected God's kingdom, number one, then they refused to go and spread it. Well, that was fine. That didn't mean that God's message about his kingdom was not going to get spread. He started with the 12, went with others, and they still evangelized the whole world in about 25 years anyway. There's another page here that he has written, but I will we'll wait that till Lord willing next week, and we'll probably finish up the rich man and Lazarus. It might be next week, but it might be a week after. We might be another 2 weeks on this.